from Balloon Guy on Main Street USA in the Magic Kingdom. Yes, selling balloons in a yellow banana costume. From the balloon guy to a business owner, leading national, maybe international, Jake?
Yes, international.
Sure. Consulting, training, coach, author, just an amazing human being overall, and someone that I really am excited to bring on the HR and Spotlight show today, Mr. Jake Poore. How are we doing out there?
Nice to see you, my friend, and nice to see all your viewers out there.
Yeah, they're excited to see you, the millions and millions of people out there. So, Jake, I cannot wait to talk about how you went from selling balloons on Main Street USA to owning your own company with a staff of folks and changing, and I wrote this down. Let me just, changing and adding the human side of healthcare. One of the top companies in your space, correct? To do what you're doing for hospitals and healthcare. So tell us, you know what? No, don't tell us yet. Tell us what you brought.
Oh, yeah. So I brought a Diet Dr. Pepper because it's the afternoon and you need that little pick-me-up. I also brought it in my favorite mug right now is this mug right here, which is from Franciscan Crown Point, which is one of my clients. And this is their True North Compass. Their True North points to together we create lasting connections through our hearts, hands, and faith always. It's a faith-based organization. And so if you think about the organizational compass, it must point to the True North. So the True North they selected that I helped them create, which is together we make lasting connections. Now, do they also have a mission, vision, and values? Yes. But this is the thread that pulls through all those mission, vision, and values that really, those first five words, together we make lasting connections. And so it doesn't matter where you work or what you do. Kind of reminds us back in our old Disney days, right? We create happiness by providing the finest entertainment for people all ages everywhere. Mm-hmm. That's Disney's True North. It's secret. It's covert. We don't put it on a billboard. But everybody, every cast member who works at Disney, every contractor, every subcontractor, they know it. And as Walt used to say, it's lasted the test of time.
Right. And you wrote a book in regards to your experience at Disney. We're going to get to that in a couple of minutes, but I guess just overall, tell us about your journey. I know, obviously, a joke, you sold balloons on Main Street USA, but you and I also met when we were working and teaching seminar productions at Walt Disney World. But talk to us about Jake's journey.
Well, it's not a joke. Recruited out of my sophomore year, between my sophomore and junior year of college up at Rochester Institute of Technology, just to get out of the snow. Those of you from upstate New York or upstate Michigan, you know what I'm talking about. Just getting to school was a feat. Chuck, Pennsylvania, right? Mm-hmm. Chuck and I were lucky enough to, get college credit for working at the friendliest place on earth. But the serious side of that was back in the 80s, and we're old, we got to go to school one day a week at Disney University, a very famous corporate university where Disney teaches its philosophy to not only its new employees, which they call cast members, but its contracted employees, and it also does leadership development. And Chuck and I learned the science and the art of Disney through vice presidents. So these weren't just adjunct professors or frontline managers. When Chuck and I went to school there, it was taught by vice presidents. So Disney has a wastewater treatment plant. So we did a class on wastewater treatment. We did a class on restaurant and food and beverage. And we got to create our own, I don't remember what you created, Chuck, but I created an underwater restaurant. Called the Seven Seas Lagoon Restaurant, and I was going to put it in the Seven Seas Lagoon. And of course, that was 1982. 4 years later, they open up the Living Seas Pavilion at Epcot, and they have an underwater restaurant called the Coral Reef.
Hey, there you
go. I think they stole my idea, but I don't know. But anyway, my career at Disney was storied. Starting at $3.81 an hour as a lonely balloon seller, but also going to school at Disney University. And I fell in love with the company. I said, gosh, you know, someday I'm going to come back after I graduate and work here. Well, unbeknownst to me, my manager heard about something opening up at Epcot after the college program and called me up at school and said, hey, you'd be perfect for this research facility. They're doing all kinds of ideas with mergers and acquisitions and the corporate company. You know, why don't you try? I said, I just signed up for all these classes. And he goes, oh, we'll reimburse you. We'll fly you back. Come on back down. I'm like, sign me up. And little did I know, also Disney would pay for the rest of my education. So that was good. So I worked at Epcot. I opened up Epcot Center, this place called the Teacher Center and Epcot Outreach. Right. And from there, our new president and CEO, Michael Eisner and Frank Wells, would call probably twice a week. And they'd say, we need to do research on these four television companies. And then a week later, we acquired them. We need to do research on opening up a park in Paris or Madrid. Do the I did the whole demographic research on both parks. And they ended up, you know, building a park in Paris and Tokyo. And so it was a great career. I auditioned along with you and 400 other people to teach new employee orientation, which they only selected 9 of us. I'm like, wow. I mean, that was a great year. I think it was 1986 as well, right? So we got to teach new cast members how to be role model cast members. Talk about human resources, having an auditioning process for your employees, your best of best employees, to still work in their real location, but also be borrowed over once a month or twice a month to teach that enthusiasm. What's it like to grow from a balloon seller up in the organization? So that just gives you a taste of it. I mean, I worked on a lot of projects, as you know, but I'm not going to bore your listeners with all my 18 and a half years with Disney.
You don't have to keep going back on the dates, because I don't think you were talking about the 80s. We weren't in the 80s, were we?
No. Yeah, no, I'm only 24.
Yeah, no. But I will tell you, I did make an offhanded remark at one point in time amongst some management, because I was a huge Star Wars fan. I said, wouldn't it be cool if Disney had a Star Wars land? I mean, that was like offhanded. And look at that. Bam.
Bam. See, you know, we don't get any credit. We don't get any credit we deserve.
No credit at all. Jeez. So, all right. Well, talk to me about your company now. So I know your tagline on your email is the human side of healthcare.
Yep.
And your company now is called Integrated Loyalty Systems. Your domain name is called WeCreateLoyalty.com, correct?
Correct.
What's that all about?
Well, to tell you about my company today, I actually have to step back again to Disney for a moment, Chuck, because you know that I left the company after 12 years and I was recruited away by the Franklin Covey organization. So Stephen Covey and the 7 Habits of Highly Effective Leaders and Trainers. And we have all kinds of facets of that. The Daytimer, the Franklin Day Planner. And I did that for 2 years. And then Disney called and said, hey, we want you to come back. We're launching the Disney Institute, and we'd like you to lead the healthcare division. And I'm like, well, that's great. So I came back for 6 years, and we developed 5 3.5-day programs on the Disney culture, okay? So Disney approach to people management was on recruitment, selection, onboarding, on-the-job training, communication, and care. Disney approach to quality service was on name tags, uniforms, signage, customer service, service recovery, on-the-spot recognition, developing and mentoring employees, building ambiance and understanding the customer experience, leadership development, supply chain management, the whole 9 yards, Disney approach to customer loyalty. We did 5 3.5-day programs. So in that 6 years, not only did I work at Disney a dozen years prior to that and was immersed in the ether that was Disney, but now I actually had faculty and curriculum designers developing 3.5-day experiences where we'd literally take you out in the parks, take you down in the tunnels, and let you see the infrastructure, the break rooms, the uniforms, the wardrobe, the eating facilities, the hiding all the dirty laundry, and then bring you back to the classroom and say, so what? You know, that's Disney. They're a multi-billion dollar organization. What does that mean to your bank? What does that mean to your HR team? What does that mean to your hospital? And I love this job because not only did I get to work with awesome companies like Travelers and Citibank coming together as Citigroup, or BMW reinventing their brand, or Exxon and Mobil, you know, we did the whole rebranding of Exxon after the Valdez oil spill, not the Disney Institute. I mean, we did some awesome stuff, but I got to do my passion, which was healthcare. My mom was a nurse in a state-run institution in upstate New York. She only had one union, and she says, we can't get anything done here. I can't promote good people. I can't get rid of bad people. I go, Mom, no offense, we got 24 unions at Disney. We're the same size as San Francisco. We're twice the size of New York City. We have 100,000 employees on our property. She goes, well, how do you do it? I said, there's a science. So I took that science after 18 years, and I left. After 9/11, I said, I want to do something different. I want to elevate the human side of healthcare, or at least elevate the human side of other businesses. And I took those Disney blueprints that I, you know, sort of like Pangea, you know, this whole philosophy that the seven continents were actually one continent. Well, that's what I thought about the Disney culture. It was Pangea, but we broke it up into five pieces. I didn't want to sell 5 3.5-day programs. I wanted to sell how to create a world-class service culture. So I took those blueprints, and I knew I didn't have all the answers. So I took them to Mayo Clinic, which I thought was the best hospital in America, in Rochester, Minnesota. I said, here, I'm giving this to you. So I worked for 3 months with the finance department in Scottsdale, Rochester, Minnesota, and Jacksonville, Florida. And we saw if we could take the Disney culture and mirror it with the Mayo brother culture. And they gave me about 7 other boxes of the culture that I didn't have, right? So then I went to Southwest Airlines in Love Field, and I went through their training program, their onboarding program, and I found 4 more boxes. So what I'm basically doing, Chuck, is if you think about a kid's map, you know, a kid's puzzle of the United States, you know, there's 50 little, you know, different colored boxes. I had about 37 boxes, but I knew I didn't have it all. So I studied Starbucks, I studied Ritz-Carlton, and so I think now I've got this blueprint. And for the past 18 years, so 18 years at Disney and now 18 years on my own, I have been helping other organizations. I go into other organizations with these blueprints and I say, let me look at your organization through these blueprints and I'll let you know what you're missing or what connections are not made. And then I help them develop their own culture. And then the scaffolding, the HR scaffolding around that jello called culture, to make sure that when I leave, and I will leave, that culture doesn't fall down like a house of cards. So that's why, you know, the book actually is my wife nagging me for 4 years, driving back and forth to upstate New York every summer going, tell me some more stories, tell me some more stories. And she typed as I drove, and we came up with 99 tips that I learned from Disney that I applied to healthcare. So that's the name of the book, 99 Lessons Learned from Disney to Improve the Patient Experience. Now, Chuck, you're going to read through this and you're going to go, oh, we know that. Wear your name tag over your heart, right? You know, have a name tag that doesn't flip over. Put your city and birth state on your name tag. You know, these simple things. But as you know, Chuck, they're common sense, but they're not common practice because people don't write them down.
Right.
That's the ether. That was the idea. And then what I figured out after, you know, about 6 or 7 years of doing this with a physician friend of mine and a CFO friend of mine is we didn't have experts. You know, I don't know how to do 360 assessments. So I outsourced that. I outsourced that so many times. I brought that person in. I don't know how to create training videos. So I outsourced it and an editor, and I spent boatloads of money. And finally I brought those people in. So now, you know, now we have a dozen or so employees on the high end, 20 employees when we have a lot of contractors in. And so now what I've tried to do is find experts of those little boxes. And over time, if we have the expertise, we bring it in-house. If we don't have the expertise, we take it, well, I don't want to say outhouse because that doesn't sound good. But, so that's what we've done. And it takes about 2 years to build a formal service culture in organizations.
Okay. That's what I was going to ask you. I like, and I want you to go still continue down that road.
Sure.
But I like how you described your process. And you and I have talked off camera over the years. You said you have a very specific road. I can't remember what you called it, but it was a roadmap or a process. And I like how you described part of that process is, here's these blueprints, right? Here's this box.
Yeah.
Let me look at your organization through this, through these lenses, so to speak.
Yeah.
And let me see how things line up. And I like that. I don't know how that differs from other I don't know, would you consider yourself a consultant, what would you consider yourself to be, Jake?
Well, that's, you're asking the wrong person. My wife would be giggling right now, but you know, I guess I'm a cultural guru, right? But I'm sort of a cultural engineer. You know, guru like sounds like someone who's sitting Indian style, which I can't do because my hamstrings are, where an engineer designs blueprints, hires contractors, subject matter experts to build those blueprints. And then we leave, we all stand back and look at this beautiful thing we created. And I get the heck out of there. I type up a case study. I give it to 10 other people. And this has been a self-fulfilling prophecy for me for the last 18 or so years. So it's hard work. It's not easy. If you want easy, if you want shortcuts, I'm not the guy. You know, if you imagine me dressed with my face painted, long hair, I'm Mel Gibson in Braveheart, right? My mantra is, all right, people, I'm looking at an audience of 1,000 leaders at a big organization like Dignity Health in California. All right, who's with me? We're going to march into battle. I got a kilt on. You know, it's a beautiful thing. We're going to do small incremental change over a long period of time. I look back and nobody's with me, right? They all want the pill. They want the easy. They want the cookie cutter. They want the, right? I don't have time for that small stuff. Right. But that's what made Disney Disney. You know, that's what made Disney so sustainable for, you know, since 1955, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
And what I learned from Disney is shortcuts will burn you later, if not now. And so it's a very robust process. I think your HR folks, you know, I love HR. The vice president of human resource becomes my best friend at the outset. The vice president, if they have one, of organizational development becomes my partner in crime. But if you don't have recruitment, then you're constantly putting bad blood in a healthy body. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a performance evaluation that pays people for the performance of the culture that you help design, then you don't, basically you don't have any skin in the game. You know, physicians in America are paid on one thing right now. Relative value units. They're called RVUs. Doesn't matter. So the more patients you see and the sicker they are, the more money they make per hour. Well, if that's all we measure is productivity, then what are you always going to get? Mm-hmm. That's why they don't have very good bedside manners, because there's no skin in the game. But if you say that patient experience, employee engagement, and business outcomes are equal, or we're going to put 60% on the patient experience and 30% on that and 10% on this, you know, then you have skin in the game. You know, at the end of the day, if, you know, there were no cops, people wouldn't stop at stop signs. You got to have accountability at some point. But accountability to what? It's nebulous, this thing called culture. Right. Well, we make it pass fail. We don't make it gray.
Yeah, I love the term cultural engineer. I do that. I tell folks, you know, what they say, well, what's your specialty? What can you do? I say, well, think of me as I can be an architect, architecting HR departments. I go in, I can see what's working, what's not working, what we can improve, you know, based on my experiences or my internal blueprints. So you build this building, and you alluded to this. So you're the engineer, you're the cultural engineer. Well, you've got your architectural drawings. You've looked at it, you're the engineer, you've built this building. At some point, you're walking away, right? And just like any building, like any attraction at any theme park, any large cruise ship, right? Eventually the builders, the engineers walk away, and that thing's got to sail on its own.
Yeah.
So how do you do that, Jake? How do you get that ship to sail on its own?
That's the secret sauce. Mm. I can tell you, but then I have to kill you. What I've learned, Chuck, is you're not Disney. Okay? Right. The hospital's not Disney. The Disney blueprints aren't going to work outside of Disney. right? I can give you the Cleveland Clinic way, Mayo Clinic way, I give you the Ritz-Carlton way, but you're not a luxury hotel. So the secret sauce, whether overt or covert, you got to get the employees to think it's their idea. They got to get their hands dirty. This is Habitat for Humanity culture, okay? You may not know how to use a hammer or a saw or how to build a house, but you just got to show up. So I get a smattering of informal leaders and formal leaders together for 2 days to build those architectural blueprints with me. Now, I'm the general contractor. I will make sure that you don't hurt your thumb, you don't cut off your hand, right? But also I will help you avoid the pitfalls that most organizations go through, and they don't build enough infrastructure and scaffolding to support this thing, because everybody wants to do it quick. They want to do it fast. They want to get it up and running. Can't we just pull a string in our neck and say the Disney way or the Chick-fil-A way? You can, but it's not going to come out authentic or be sincere, and it's not going to be sustainable, and it won't pass a snicker test where those employees have been with you 10 to 20 to 30 years. As soon as you turn your eye off something else, they're going to go back to the way it used to be, or worse. And then you become a punchline. And nobody wants to become a punchline, you know? Oh, yeah, we're elevating the human side of healthcare. Right? So not only do I get them to help design it, I get them to help show up once a week or once a month to help build it, new employee orientation, maybe even audition for the right to teach it, help build the slides, get in front of the CEO with a video camera and help them do an opening video. All these little pieces of the puzzle have got to be coming together. It can't be just me and my 12 employees. It's got to be them. And they got to see their fingerprints on it. So when I leave, they have trained the trainer. So when I leave, it's not the Jake Poor way or the integrated loyalty systems way, it's their way. And it's not me facilitating all the workshops. I do a lot of the leadership workshops at the beginning, but I'm giving them a leader's toolkit. And the leader's toolkit helps them take the tools back to their department to localize the global culture in their specialty. And if they don't localize it, then they've been sheep dipped. That's what they say in Iowa, right? Most training is like dipping sheep in a trough, right? We do it once a quarter. We have to do mandatory training. Right. We dip them in the trough. They have pizza and cake and mandatory training. They get a notebook, and it goes right in the trash can as soon as they leave.
That's funny. Sheep dip.
How's that working for you?
I love that. I love that. And I got to tell you, I have worked over the years for different leaders, and some completely understand that. And then there are some that I've worked with that will say something along the lines of, we need to improve our management skills or our communications, or we improve morale around here. We need to improve customer service. Chuck, get someone to come in and do a speaker come in to talk to everyone, to do a day of training.
Yeah. Rah, rah. Yeah. And there's nothing worse. And I have a philosophy when I'm a keynote speaker, and I say to the audience, I said, I know what you're thinking right now. Your head can only handle what your butt can endure, right? You know, your butt is not enduring. I'm the last speaker of a three-day workshop, and I come in here, what am I going to give you that you can walk away and apply? There's nothing worse than being fired up by a motivational speaker, and then you get back and you're like, what do I do now? I hate that. That's why I hate, don't call me a motivational speaker, because that's flash in the pan. That's not steak and potatoes. I want sustainability.
Well, you're motivating me. I'm ready to sign up right now.
Come on,
let's go.
I need a good HR guy, and Chuck's the best.
I love what you're saying. And in fact, Jake, and you and I have known each other since the late 80s. And the one thing I like about you, the one thing I like about the folks that are in that sphere of people we've interacted with, is we keep in touch. And there's a loyalty amongst us as friends, colleagues, as we go through life. And I love that. And I love the fact that you've taken the word loyalty, you've put it into your domain name, you've put it into your company's name. Loyalty is important to you. Yeah. So talk to me about loyalty in your transformation of an organization. Who's loyal, Jake? Who are you trying to create loyalty for?
Well, you know, I can't take credit for all of that. And if I first of all, the name of the company, the three founders of our company, we locked ourselves in a Hyatt Regency suite for 3 days, and we cranked out a business plan and, you know, lots of sticky notes, lots of flip charts all over the room. And we said, what do we want to create here? It's a training and consulting firm, but what's our name? Well, we want to create loyalty. We're not about flash in the pan, chasing shiny objects. Everybody's chasing either I hope you can edit this thing. The mighty dollar, or employee satisfaction, or patient satisfaction, or internally, depending on what you're measuring, employee satisfaction. So we want to create loyalty. If I had to think it all over again, I don't even want loyalty, because that's here. Advocacy. We want people who are so loyal, you know, that they're out in the community saying, you got to go to Disney. You got to stay at the Ritz-Carlton. You got to go to Florida Hospital. What do you mean? I had a procedure there 10 years ago. They were nasty. Oh my gosh. No, I volunteer there. You don't understand. That's my hospital. That it would never happen in my hospital. Those people are gone, right? That's what you want. You want raving fans. And so we said, it's got to be loyalty. But well, how do you get it there? Well, you've got to have the pieces that are integrated together that drives that. So integrated loyalty, and you've got to have systems. And then, you know, we overthought this, obviously. You've got to have systems in place. How do you recruit? How do you reward it when you see it and hold people accountable when you don't? It's what I liked about Disney, Chuck, is people think, well, you worked at the happiest place on earth. It was hard work. And we had bad leaders. I had one manager. All she cared about was whether my hair was touching my top of my ears or the back of my collar. She was Greta Groomer, right? She didn't care about my attendance, about my quality, about my customer service skills, or whether I was getting along and working as a team, right? We all have bad leaders. That's not the question. How does the culture eat them and spit them out? Disney was really good at saying, this is good and this is bad, right? Here's the gray area that a lot of companies have, and that's where you die. With 24 unions and 17 bargain agreements, we didn't have that luxury. It was pass fail. And I think a lot of organizations of your customers that are watching this right now, it's not pass fail. It's, well, I know we have a no open toe policy, but she's a great nurse. I know we're not supposed to say vulgar language or use honey, sweetie, sugar pie, dude, or chief, but he's such a great doctor and he refers so many patients here. I know he throws instruments in the OR, but can't we look the other way this time? Or worse, a lot of HR people don't have a leg to stand on. We've got to file this thick. Let's take that out. Forget the file. We call the manager and say, you're right. We're going to terminate this employee. Can you send the paperwork over? Paperwork? I don't have any paperwork. What? You don't have any proof? This is literally admissible in court. We could be sued if we do a wrongful suit here or wrongful termination. Oh, well, I didn't have time to write them up. I tell them all the time. You don't write it down. You know, Chuck.
Right.
You don't write it down. You've just handcuffed the HR person. Yeah. So now HR gets a bad rap in the organization amongst managers, and it's not fair. Now, sometimes it's fair because HR then makes that recommendation to the vice president or chief nursing officer and says, we need to terminate. Oh, no, no. You don't understand. We're short staff right now. You can't terminate. Well, you don't understand. If you don't terminate this person, it sets a precedent. And this is where culture eats strategy for lunch, right? I know your HR people. I work with them every day in hospitals all over this great country of ours. And they're either getting beat up by their executives, or they're getting beat up by the manager, or they're getting beat up by the person they're trying to fire when they know they're the ones who did it wrong. So they're just caught in the middle, like you and me, Chuck, baby.
Chuck, baby. Sure. So I love, just to reiterate some of the things I heard, it's incremental changes over a long extended time. It's not, hey, here's how you need to do it, and you start doing it. So you slow burn it, you marinate it. I don't know why the word marinate comes to mind, but you're marinating the whole situation until it's ready to cook and serve. And you can't marinate too quickly. It needs to be just right. Well, it sounds like a lot of in-person interaction. So how does the future look now in regards to adapting to maybe a more virtual world? Are you doing anything along those lines?
Yeah, that's a great question. And my wife is the savant of the company, right? She's our chief financial officer. She's always pushing me 10 steps ahead. So last November, she says, hey, why don't you put some lesson plan? I'm getting a lot of requests for each of your chapters to have lesson plans. So I spent the last 4 months of last year putting together a workbook that's a complement to this. So for each chapter, you can do like a workplace Bible study with your team, right? Get what everybody that you can all then pull out the worksheets and say, all right, our first chapter is on our true north. How are we going to connect people to purpose so that we make lasting connections, not just, you know, create healthier communities, which is ambiguous. That was number one. Number two, in January, we started to create videos. So I hired a guy. He came in. We created a studio in our office, very much like this background right here. So unfortunately, it actually looks like this.
I love that.
So Chris Anderson, who used to work at Disney with me and at Disney Vacation Club, we launched Disney's version of Timeshare. He's a videographer now, and he came in and created a whole studio in my office building. And we created 99 videos to go with each of the chapters. Now we have 99 videos, 99 lesson plans, and now we put it all on LearnWorlds, which is a learning management platform, so that we can sell subscriptions to that. So not only do you get an opening video from me, you get the actual chapter of the book, and you get lesson plans. Now I took 36 years of video, examples from doctors and nurses and bankers and airlines and all these interviews I've been doing with customers and employees, and I imbued them into the 99 lessons. So that's what I've been doing during COVID, as well as juggling all my other clients. But everything we need to do now is virtual. Now, I will be going on the road next week to Northern Indiana and Arkansas in the next 2 weeks, because they have very little cases of COVID, and I feel pretty safe to get back in that environment. But pretty much 95% of what we do now is online, and I love it because I can do virtual workshops. I'm doing a live 4-hour workshop with the U.S. Air Force in Venice, Italy, coming up in October. And they're like, don't come, just do it online. We trust you. And it's, you know, it's different, you know that, but it's a lot of fun. So we've gone totally virtual. And I think COVID's been a blessing for HR, because trying to find meeting rooms, trying to get speakers, travel expenses, all that other minutia that goes into putting on a workshop. Now the question is, how do we make it engaging enough and keep them focused enough so that they feel it's a good return on their investment?
Right. And folks, I just want to let you know, Jake didn't know I was going to ask that question, but I have seen the product of which he speaks, and it is absolutely amazing. It is a brilliant idea. It is so well done. I absolutely cannot talk more highly about it. It's really good stuff. So with that in mind, Jake, we're coming up on our time.
Sure.
Folks wanted to, first of all, did I miss anything? Is there any other message you'd want to get out? And then if folks wanted to get hold of you, how could they get hold of you? And what would that experience be like?
Well, I mean, I'm on LinkedIn. My last name's just like my financial status, Poor. So that's easy to remember. Jake from State Farm meets Poor Jake. Okay, so I'm on LinkedIn, Integrated Loyalty Systems. Our URL, you already talked about it, is wecreateloyalty.com. There's a, you know, contact us there, which is, it goes info, it goes right to my administrator, Miriam, which gives me all those. You can write me directly, jake.poor@wecreateloyalty.com. Our book's on Amazon. You can buy that. There's a lot of different ways you can reach out to us. You can reach out to Chuck, who has my direct cell phone number. So there's lots of things you can do.
And I'll have in the notes below, I'll have that information.
Okay.
So great. Anything else for us today, Jakester?
I think we pretty much covered it. I'm going to need a nap after this. There's a lot of love in the air here. So
absolutely. Well, I loved having you on the HR and Leadership Spotlight Show. Folks, if you have a business, you have a message that you want to get out, something you want to share with HR leaders, we can help. I would love to have you on the HR and Leadership Spotlight Show. My information is below also. Jake from Poor, Jake Poor. We will see you around. Folks, thanks for watching the HR and Leadership Spotlight Show.